Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run down the field and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome back to another episode of 11 Personnel with Nick Roush and Adam Luckett, where even though Kentucky did not play a football game last Saturday, Luckett, we still have a lot to talk about following the bye week, from happenings around the SEC, the games that were actually played, but mostly to the games that won't be played. And as of Tuesday night when we're recording this during Maction, which I think is going to be a nice little weekly tradition now, there have been three SEC games already postponed for this weekend, and it's our first real big outbreak. It's the first time we've had an outbreak really derail a Saturday slate.
Yeah, and it's some bigger games too. Like that, I mean, Alabama LSU, obviously some luster was knocked off of it this year, but that was the game they put on Master Saturday.
Right.
When they knew CBS, that was their big top choice, was getting that game and putting it on that day and having the Masters lead into it. And that is no more. And now you've got a situation where LSU has already had a game rescheduled. So they're playing Florida on December 12th right now. Now, are you just going to let Bama have that extra bye week? Is it even going to matter? Are there going to be more cancellations? There's a lot of stuff I think they need to figure out how they're going to go about this. And that it's going to – now, we think Kentucky's going to play on Saturday. As of Tuesday evening, where we sit right now.
Right.
As of right now, the game is scheduled to be played, and everybody's moving forward to play that game. But there's no way it doesn't affect Kentucky. Even if they play this week, they would have to do some schedule shuffling. Most likely would be moving the Alabama game to December 12th so Alabama could play all 10 games.
And I saw how the scenario plays out, and you weren't the only one who kind of had the Kentucky-Alabama game getting moved to that last part of the season to make way for to let the Crimson Tide get 10 games in. Nevertheless, they've also talked about, well, what if you just push everything back a week? But
yeah, like the whole league cancels this week.
Yeah, and they also have like a scenario where they're like, well, what if the teams who aren't in the SEC championship game play on that Saturday? And I'm like, well, who cares? Like, I know that this happens every year
where
teams are playing in games that are kind of inconsequential, but that will really make it feel inconsequential if you're playing the same day as the league championship game. So like it brings up a real, like, we've got a month left in the season, and I'm sure there are plenty of vibes out there. Like, I mean, who gives a shit anymore? Unfortunately.
I mean, the SEC championship game is Birmingham's baby.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the biggest event all year. They have it in their biggest hub. It's this big spectacle. They were the ones who started conference championship games. And now that weekend has become this huge weekend in college football. And that's,
they got to move to prime time this year too.
They got to move to prime time this year for the first time in a while. That's not something they really want to mess with. So if now they came out and announced that they're willing to have moved games there, you know, by force more than anything, that shows you that they're just going to do what they can at best to get these rescheduled. And I would expect if the games go off, the rest of them as scheduled this weekend, that we'll probably get an announcement on Sunday or something, saying that, you know, this is how the new schedule is going to go, and that would be Kentucky moving to December 12th, that Tuscaloosa road trip.
And would that give UK another bye week and just take away the South Carolina game?
No, you would still play. No, you play because the SEC championship's on the 19th, and the last regular season is currently scheduled for the 5th, but they left the 12th there in case of postponements so to give them some wiggle room.
So in your scenario, you're moving South Carolina back to the 19th and playing Alabama on the 12th, essentially giving yourself a bye week after the Florida game. Right?
The South Carolina game would stay the same. My scenario is Kentucky goes by, Vanderbilt by, Florida, South Carolina, Alabama to end the season.
And then play Alabama's SEC championship game the 19th.
Yeah, Alabama plays Florida the 19th, but they would play Kentucky the 12th.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because Florida's playing LSU the 12th.
Okay.
And those are the two likely teams in the SEC title game where we stand right now.
Which really, it's a schedule change, but it's, for all intents and purposes, like, you know, who cares? What's most important right now is that Kentucky does play on Saturday. As we mentioned, there are three game postponements. The first was Auburn, Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm. And Mississippi State barely played this past week. Mike Leach said they only had like a couple guys over that threshold.
They needed like, if one or two more would have had it, they would have canceled the Vandy game, mm-hmm. which, you know, you haven't had people passing it back and forth between one another in a game. But if that happened, then you worry more and more about the Kentucky game on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Turns out Auburn's also had cases creep up. You know, you've had Sam Pittman, who is not going to be coaching for Arkansas this weekend. He's got it. He'll be in quarantine. Barry Odom's taking over.
Vandy has played with it pretty much all year. They've had guys, unspecified guys, out. They, of course, had to cancel a game against Missouri earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. In the state, and according to Matt's tweet, they're still dealing with some issues right now. And Ole Miss has had some issues. Lane Kiffin, I believe, the week they played Arkansas was like, as of right now, we're fine. But if we get a rough patch in here this week, we won't be able to play. And he said that on like Tuesday or Wednesday that week. They ended up being able to pull the game off. But there's definitely some of that going on around the league right now, big time.
And we're all seeing it. It's only been reported at one place, and that was at LSU. Ross Dellinger said, yeah, a lot of it's stemming from a party Halloween night. But really, let's be honest, this is all everybody just went out and partied Halloween night. And can you blame him? Like, you remember how much fun Halloween night was in college.
Yeah, it's not just that. I think, like, you've got a bunch of 18 to 22-year-old kids. Since, like, it became official that they're going to play football, they've been kind of on lockdown. Like, I was thinking about this today. Like, can these guys even go to, like, B-dubs on a Sunday and watch NFL?
Man, I don't know. I mean, and that's been since
June? I don't think they can. I think that's probably against the rules. So it's a lot of just, you know, you go home, you eat the food they provide you. You know, you're living a pretty secluded life.
And you're so, playing like, a very difficult schedule.
Well,
that's wearing Nick, on you physically mm-hmm. and mentally. And, I mean, hell, look it. I feel the mental wear, and I'm just typing about it.
Well, if you get to the point, this is the point in the season where it starts to wear down, and it's getting to a point where a lot of people can classify if they're having a good season or a disappointing season. I think so far Kentucky falls in that disappointing category. So you may get, not saying Kentucky players are doing this right now, but you may get players that in other programs that are just like, or in any program, just be like, man, screw this. I'm going to go drink a beer at these dudes' house across the street or having a few people over, or I'm going to go do this or that. Maybe not being as strict as they would if, like, oh man, we're 5-1. We got a big game coming up on Saturday. Let's stay locked in. It definitely gets it easier to make some of this, you know, college kid decision that you have to make, I guess, in this climate.
Right now, I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams in the league are over 500 on the year.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, we heard Stoops talk about that this week. Yeah. I was of the opinion before the season, because there were some radio jocks here in Louisville that started talking about, you know, would 8-4, 4-4 be a good season for Kentucky? And yes, it's always going to be a good season. Like, always. 4-4 in the SEC is good for Kentucky. They've only done it a handful of times. They've had one winning season and whatnot. Like, 4-4 is absolutely always a good season. 8-4. You beat Louisville. You're 8-4, and your bowl went away from like maybe the Outback Bowl, or maybe a decent level bowl from being a top 25 team. That's always a good season, no matter what happens in the year. But things can just get skewed in this All-SEC season because our brains aren't built to calculate how this whole season is working. It goes against everything everybody's grown up or you are adapted to getting used to in college football. We're really 4-6. Like 4-6 is a respectable season, I think, in the SEC. 5-5 is, pretty good, especially for Kentucky. Like 6-4 for Auburn. If Auburn gets to 6-4, I think that's a great season for Auburn. I think it's a really good season.
And the thing is, too, Luckett, even though we told ourselves before the season we had to adjust our expectations, you can tell yourself that, but you can't change the way you feel when you lose on a game day. And that's the thing that these players are going through right now, where the opportunities to even feel good about a win, feel good about a game, it's just slim pickings for most teams in the SEC. So it's been a tough, tough class. As Stoop said at the end of the year, we're probably just going to look back on this and say, what the hell did we do to ourselves? And I think that's why you're seeing teams get a little bit more lax on their COVID stuff, because they're just, frankly, they're fed up and they're tired of it. It's been a long, long time just to play the season, and then they're finally playing it, and they're getting their asses kicked.
Coin flip games, look at all these spreads. So one possession games, Kentucky's the expectation. Every game's been one possession except Georgia in the line.
And this one, now Vandy.
Yeah, and this one. Everything else is just like it's expected. All right, it's going to come down to last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. You're going to have a chance to win or lose a game. And Kentucky, unfortunately, has lost those games. Auburn and Missouri, they were within a touchdown in the fourth quarter, and they found a way to kind of lose both of them going away. And then Ole Miss, they couldn't figure out a way to win that one either. So you lose those games. And it just – you win one of them and the whole thing is different. You win two of them, you're really feeling good. But football's a small sample size sport, man. You can lose a couple games and, everything can go down the drain. It's why it's a great sport, but it can also be a brutal sport at the same time. But Nick, in no matter any season, it's called Remember November. We talk about and we remember what the team does in the last month and then what they do in the bowl game. Like the bowl game gets way too much prop for every impending offseason, what we talk about.
It's your most recent memory.
So
Kentucky,
like last year, Kentucky played a bunch of bad teams at the end of the season, racked up a bunch of wins, ran for a bunch of yards, and then found a way to beat Virginia Tech in the bowl game. And then it got a ton of really good hype for the program going into the offseason. When really, when you look at if you flip it, if the season happens in reverse order, where how Kentucky started the year 2-3, the whole tenor of the offseason is different. So they have a chance here, I think, if they can get it together, get competitive, Alabama, Florida, take care of South Carolina and Vanderbilt, who are two teams. Vandy's just they're fighting like hell, but they just don't have a lot there. But South Carolina appears to be going in the wrong direction fast. So, and especially with that being the last game, you got a chance, I think, to end with a good taste in your mouth and then to kind of have the season be a little bit of a wash when you get out of it. But you got to get through it first.
There's been one exception to that rule, Luckett, and I think that's 07, because they built up so much goodwill with their early season wins and having game day and everything that, like, once it kind of went off the rails in October, it was like, you still got the bowl win that year too.
If they don't get that bowl, like they got a bowl win over a brand name team. If they don't get that bowl win, I think you look at that season a lot different. Mm-hmm. I think that helps save.
You look at the mistakes at Tennessee and just like beating your head against the wall.
Well, you lose to a South Carolina team, you're straight up better than just because of turnovers. Mississippi State, they lost to two teams. They were just straight up better than them. Mississippi State, South Carolina.
Yeah.
And then the Tennessee game, if those two teams played 10 times, they probably each went 5.
Nothing can reinforce that statement better than the 2016 season, where there were two weekends you thought Mark Stoops was going to get fired if he doesn't win, and that was South Carolina and Mississippi State. That's how bad things were for a time. But then you end the season beating Lamar Jackson and like, duh, let's freaking go. You know, I mean, hell, that's a win you talk about for a long time. And then you get to go to a Florida bowl game for the first time.
It was not only that, though, they were very competitive down the stretch, I think. Alabama, they put up a decent fight when they were totally outclassed. Tennessee, they ran for a bunch of yards. So they were in all those games, I think. Georgia, they had Georgia on the ropes at Kroger Field. Now that SEC East was a lot.
It was bad.
It was a bad SEC East, but that it came out a good time for the program for them to be bad, so they can kind of get themselves going.
Well, and the good thing is Kentucky can get themselves going against Vanderbilt this weekend. That's why it's important to make sure that this game is played. I know UK issued a statement that they're confident the game will still be played.
Yeah.
So having that would be important just to see the offense do some good against a bad Vanderbilt defense, against a Vanderbilt offense that puts up a lot of yards without scoring very many points, which has kind of been Kentucky's defensive MO. Even on their worst days, they're still not giving up that many points. They're getting stops in the red zone. So this is a game that of all the ones that could potentially get postponed, this is the one you don't want to get postponed because Kentucky needs some positive momentum after a few crappy weeks.
In the worst way. Right now, you're looking at a 17-point spread. The total is around 42. So if you project that out, you know, in a realistic football score, Kentucky 30, Vanderbilt 13. Like, if you told me that's what Kentucky gets on Saturday, I would take it and I would sprint all the way to the bank and take that. If Kentucky could get 30 points, I don't care in what form or fashion. And the defense, you know, 13 points in a game, you're going to take that. Like, if that's what they get, that would be perfect. The question is, you know, I don't know what team Kentucky's going to get on Saturday. We're hearing the offensive line's banged up. Sounding like Terry Wilson's going to be the quarterback. They're dealing with COVID issues.
It is weird, Luckett.
Right.
And, like, that's just a little bit of it because every time they seemingly talk about the offense, things don't get any perkier. Because, like you said, on the offensive line being banged up, Soup said basically they'll know game time, which means probably not. Secondly, today we're supposed to hear from Eddie Graham, and not even 5 minutes before Eddie Graham talks to the media, we got Darren Henshaw, and Henshaw's not budging on why he's there, not Eddie Graham. That's a Coach Stoops question. He said that at least three times a day. I was even doing the Big J reporter thing and just like not giving up. I asked like two different ways. Well, how does it affect game? I was trying everything, and he was not giving up absolutely anything. But that's never happened. So I know the fire Eddie Graham folks are like, oh my gosh, did he fire him? I don't think that's the case. I think if there were a case, you would connect dots and say there's offensive staffers out with COVID, and now their coach isn't going to interviews. Like,
yeah, the ring. I think you got it there.
Now I've heard that his absence might not be permanent enough to keep him away from the sideline on Saturday. Maybe Stoops will provide more clarity on Thursday, but Stoops hasn't been in the business of providing COVID insight or injury insight or quarterback insight at that. But that's what made it refreshing to hear from the quarterback's coach today, Luckett, because he really echoed this. The thing I was happy to hear from my own perspective, but it doesn't make any sense, is this like effusive, not praise. Yeah, it's effusive praise for Terry Wilson. But when asked about Joey Gatewood's game, they essentially describe the mistakes that Terry Wilson has made all season long about holding on to the ball too long, about patting it, about being indecisive, not letting it rip, and then not getting vertical enough on his runs and going sideline to sideline. But then, no, that's Gatewood. He's not doing well enough. But Terry, though, he's really, really great. He's just the best.
Adam Luckett reading the tea leaves, it's a lot of – they don't really believe in Joey Gatewood, at least his offensive staff. Well, which is concerning.
The thing that concerns me, Luckett, is they're willing to make that judgment off of one game against Georgia. They're not even going to let him try against Vanderbilt. Like, they've let Terry Wilson try how many starts? 16?
Well, they have. There's loyalty to a fault, I think, without a doubt. Just remember back Nick Haynes, how long he started before they finally pulled the plug on him back in 2016 when he had the diabetic issue. He lost all that weight. A.J. Rose, they keep giving him chances when really some of the younger backs probably deserve to get some of that numbers. Mainly Chris Rodriguez probably deserves to get a heavier chunk of the carries. You know, they stick with their guys, man. And that's what this screams is that they're just doubling down on their senior quarterback. And we'll see if it works out for them.
Well, hasn't really worked out that much this year at all. But the weirdest part of the entire thing, Luckett, was that when asked if it was a – because, like, let's be frank. We all heard the Terry Wilson opting out rumors. They were not quiet rumors whenever he had a mysterious wrist injury following the Missouri game. Most folks were thinking that Terry quit on the team. That was the assumption. Now he ended up being at the game against Georgia the following week, but there were pretty loud rumors that Terry was considering quitting the team. And reading the tea leaves, it made sense why they were moving in the direction they were to play Joey Gaylord against Georgia. Hinshaw got asked point blank about those rumors, and this was his quote. "This is really tough times. It's a situation where you get emotional. Sometimes emotions get a hold of you. But I'll tell you, the conversation I've had with Terry Wilson have been nothing but great. He loves Kentucky. He wants to. I just got off the field and just hugged him. I got off the field and said, man, what a great day. He's working hard for Kentucky football. I promise you that."
That's an odd quote.
It's so weird. I mean, this whole thing, look, is so weird. And I think without a doubt, we've learned that however they're trying to handle this quarterback situation, there's either too many cooks in the kitchen, there's too much indecision. I mean, you're seeing the
– well,
the problems with the quarterbacks are reflective in their coaches. They're indecisive, and they don't just want to chuck it deep and go for the big home run. Instead, they're playing it safe, and it's really showing up in the way that they're talking about, they're treating their quarterbacks. They're being really conservative, and they're trying to go with the guy who know can win you some games, but isn't necessarily gonna wow you. And you've seen that up until this point.
I really want to see what they do with these last four games, especially after the bye week, to kind of take everything in and try to figure out a plan. But I've talked about this. I think the whole kind of the design and the script of the offense has just stunk this year. Like, it's been very disappointing how they've came out and attacked teams, their stubbornness to not, you know, lean into Chris Rodriguez, the ineffectiveness of getting the pass game going at all for a multitude of reasons, the lack of, I guess, creativity or in the stubbornness to, like, all right, we're going to keep, you know, passing the established run. Like, you knew after you get embarrassed at Mississippi State, you think you would learn your lesson. All right, we kind of are who we are. We're going to come out and run the ball. Chris Rodriguez consistently moves forward, so we know if we give him the ball early and downs, odds are we're not going to get three and out. And then they go to Missouri and they do the same thing they did at against Mississippi State. And it just kind of creates the same situation. And, like, you look at it and it's like, what are they doing? You're right. It's just been off, the whole thing with them this year, which really, it just makes you think, like, what's the future? It seems obvious. See, they need some new blood in there, that they need, like, the team needs a fresh shot. The coaching staff overall just needs a fresh shot. There's a lot going on in that. There's a lot of issues, I think, that need to be ironed out.
And I think here's the hope I had for last week. And you know what? It still could be the case. They could, the being loyal to a fault really could just be it could just be saying nice things about Terry Wilson before he stays on the bench for the rest of the season and you try with the new guys. But that's the kind of the big, how you need to look at the big picture of this offense is you're loyal to Terry for what he's done, the wins he's gotten, just like the same thing with Eddie and Henshaw. They've been dealt bad hands for the most part when it comes to injury luck in their quarterback room, and yet they found success and they've been able to have wins. They've done a good job, but now moving forward, you know that what you've got to an extent, and this is where Grant and Henshaw need to prove that, like, okay, they can be trusted with the future of this offense in the direction it's heading. And that's why I think you've got to give some other guys shots. You've got to give young guys shots in the receiver room, because like we know what doesn't work. So that's why I'm trying to pump the brakes a little bit, Luckett, with any sort of anger or anything and super duper hot takes, because they could do that on Saturday. Yeah. And this could just be Mark Stoops's. Yeah, right. This could be Mark Stoops doing his media crap, that it can be frustrating when they don't say stuff, but we got to see this play out, because maybe this just could be their great smokescreen for Vandy to keep Derek Mason on his heels.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like that though. We'll have to wait and see, but it sounds like they're going back to Terry, and that they're doubling down again on this offense. Now, hopefully they have a different kind of design. Mainly, I would like to see them just, you know, hammer the rock over and over and over, and then when they throw the ball, just throw it deep.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even worry. Like, you're running for efficiency. When you're throwing it, though, you're throwing for big plays. And that's, you know, if we can hit a couple, you know, that's what I think they need to kind of go for, instead of – because the dink and dunk pass game, it's getting them nowhere.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Like, you just got to have to wait out and see see what it is. I think it's very safe to say there's going to be some changes in the offseason. We'll have to see when we get there and how many. Now you can make the argument, should the last four games play that big of a role or not, because we have now almost 5 years of data, Nick, on kind of what this offense is, what they've been able to do. So, you know, that decision, my mind should kind of already be made by now. Now, whether it is or not, we'll see. But I definitely think that something has to change there.
Meanwhile, I'm just watching Buffalo drop 78-yard touchdown passes where the ball's traveling 60 yards in the air. It's like, if you can do that at other places, it's not like it's impossible to do at Kentucky. I mean, hell, I just saw how I have Tim Couch thrown 7 touchdown passes today. I know it's Tim to Couch, but like, you can, the forward pass can happen. And it's to the point where, like, I just laugh at the jokes now, because, like, come on.
Yeah. But we're also with Stoops, you know, I think he's been a really good coach and done some really good things, but we're also in year 8. And the passing game it's been the same issues every year. So I think in recruiting, you can always look at changes being made. Are they devoting resources and whatnot to fix some of their issues? And I think it's fair to say they are. Like, they've recruited receiver very well the last two classes. Help is on the way. I really do think they're going to figure this out. The recruiting tells you they're investing in getting like a modern offense. They want to be able to throw the ball. They could have very easily been like, all right, let's do this Bolden ball. Let's just keep doing that. But they didn't. The recruiting tells us that they're trying to modernize, and it's just getting those players in the system and figuring out a way to get there. Because they are in a weird in-between area right now.
Yeah.
Because you have the 2017-2018 class. They invested highly in South Florida.
Didn't work.
And it's been a disaster for the program. Like, I think we can say now that situation, or that experiment, I guess you should call it, and they got out of it fast, but it is really kicking them in their ass right now. Because a lot of those players are guys that they were counting on that haven't contributed or in the rotation and are not giving much. And a lot of them have transferred out. You look at Day-Day Hawkins. BJ Alexander, Chris Whitaker, Sebastian Dolcine, Michael Nesbitt gets kicked out of school. Ashton Pierre, I don't think ever showed up on campus.
No.
That, I mean, there's a laundry list of
hell. One of the best issues. Gets was Abule, who was a late get, and he's been recruited over.
I don't even consider him, because wasn't he in Lakeland?
Yeah, he was
South Florida, and then he was in Lakeland. So yeah, I don't even consider him a part of that group. He was just a one off kind of recruitment. But yeah, it's not been good. And I think that's really what's hurting them the most right now.
Keem Hayes, Clevan Thomas.
Yeah, and then you gotta look, you know, those guys are guys that could be transferring soon. I mean, Keem Hayes seems definite at this point.
Yeah.
So does Clevan. He played a lot last year once Bolden went out. And I think he's caught one pass in the Auburn game, and we really haven't seen him.
And that was from Gatewood, I believe. Or it was his reception. No, he dropped a pass from Gatewood. So yeah, you're right. We've got one reception from him this year. So not a whole lot there. And now's the time you hope you can see some production from some of the new guys through the final four games of the season. And like I said, like it early on, this Vanderbilt defense, they give up some pass yards. Now you hope they don't do a Mississippi State and go out there and say, we're just going to throw it on this team. But you could make some plays in space against this Vanderbilt football team.
Matt Corral inflated a lot of these stats. So did Lane Kiffin when you look at some of their defensive numbers, because they just lit their ass up when they played a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, their defense is a bad defense. They're aggressive. Mainly they are able to produce some negative plays in the run game, which I think is a concern if you're Kentucky. Like, you need to avoid that at all costs. But if you're able to avoid that, Kentucky should be able to lean on them and get some big plays on the ground. And then, you know, if they could get anything in the air at this point, it's a plus.
Well, and if they're aggressive too in run defense, those blitzes, they're going to miss, and you're going to get big plays out of it.
Yeah, well, I think that's where you look at, like, Kabasie Smoke, A.J. Rose maybe, Juton McClain. You know, Rodriguez is giving you some big plays, but he doesn't have, you know, that extra gear. Those guys, if they get a crease, they could really hit something. And then you look at what the running backs for Kentucky did last year. They ran for, like, those three, Smoke, Rodriguez, Rose, ran for almost 300 yards as a threesome.
Let's run it back. Let's do it.
So like, you know, the 8-man boxes and stuff, like, screw it. Run it anyway. That's what I said. Like, what? Like, like, you've proven, like, your receivers struggle mightily to get off press. You've proven that, you know, there's not very many concepts in the pass game, at least we're not able to see, where, you know, you create easy throws and catches for whatever reason. So, just, you know, you're pretty strong. Let's just run into this wall, see if you can knock it down.
Yeah, run the damn ball. It's worked pretty well for a while at Kentucky. Let's bring it back. It's worked the last two times out against Vandy. They had to do that in that really nasty, windy game back in 2018. I was thinking back to it, like, I had a hell of a time in 2019 at Vanderbilt. It was one of those, go out on Friday night, game gets over, come back, and then go out again in Louisville on Saturday night. Hell of a daily double. And this year, you get the opportunity to watch the Cats alongside third round Masters coverage.
Moving day at the Masters.
Oh man, it's exciting. And look, I don't know about you, but the videos and it just seems like I care more now than I do in the spring. And maybe it's because we've typically had so much March Madness that kind of hangover from sports doesn't. You know, like it's nice, but you're not like jacked up for it. For some reason, man, maybe it's because the fall foliage, you know, we're getting all these reds and browns in the air, but I'm fired up for this Masters.
Yeah, I think it's just a big sporting event at a different time, so it creates some different type of excitement.
And Aaron Flaner's down there caddying for the first time, so I'm gonna be rooting for him and JT. Not the Louisville Justin Thomas, but I'll be rooting for him too. But nevertheless, it's going to be fun. It's a different time of year. You've got to have some locks for us, right? Have you cultivated your ticket yet?
Unfortunately, I have not done my research on the Masters yet.
Deep dive research.
I know.
Too much Vanderbilt.
My guy Bryson, though, is the favorite. So we'll see. No, he won't be my pick. I don't know. I'll have to do some digging. I'll find something though. Put it out there in the ether.
Did you see Tiger's menu for the Masters dinner tonight?
I did not.
It's a steak and chicken fajitas, which, like, I mean, I appreciate steak.
Do you mean separate or steak and chicken fajitas? Like steak and chicken in the fajita?
Well,
Are you talking like a separate steak and then you get like two options? It's like a wedding where it's like chicken or fish. So you get steak or chicken fajita. So which one is it?
I think it's you get both. Serving fajitas and sushi. So I think it's just both with all of the stuff. Sushi is the appetizer, I guess. And then steak and chicken fajitas. Steak and chicken is together with the peppers and the onions. And then dessert is, what's this dessert? Flan? God, flan sucks. Like churros with chocolate sauce and sopapillas. So like, I mean, I like a good Mexican meal more than most, but I would be balling on like some prime rib or something if I'm picking the menu for the Masters dinner.
Yeah, that's probably what they do a lot, though. It's probably mixing it up. Tiger's probably been to 100 of those. So he wants to try something new.
I'm surprised they don't have margaritas on the menu, too.
I mean, do you know, Nick, that like Tiger, what has he won, like four or five? But he only has one green jacket?
Is it because they only keep like one size for him at the club?
Yeah, he can – Like Tiger won the Masters last year and he gets to take that jacket with him throughout the year. Mm-hmm. But then he returns to the Masters the next year. He has to return it and it stays in its locker. Like they have a locker room for the Masters winners and his jacket stays there and he can only wear it, you know, Masters week when they do like the dinner. And I think the dinner is really the only time they can wear it and they all take that picture. And then Patrick Reed and Bubba Watson somehow weasel their way into that group. But yeah, but they have that trophy. You see the trophy in the presentation they give them, like the little circle looking trophy. Mm-hmm. That's what they get to take. Like he has whatever, four or five of those. Home.
Yeah. Right. Well, because I get the jacket thing to an extent. So
it's such a secret society thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because my basketball coach in high school was actually in the Naismith Hall of Fame. He's got a gold jacket. No, it's not because he was great at basketball. He was on a great team. He was on the undefeated Fort Hays State National Championship team in 1996. So the year that UK won the Division I tournament, they won the Division II tournament, went undefeated, beat Ben Wallace, and their team got inducted in the Hall of Fame. And he can only wear his gold jacket when he's on the grounds in
– Yeah.
Where is that?
I bet the NFL Hall of Fame's like that too. Yeah. Except for that big guy that goes around.
Oh God, that guy is enormous. I'm now mad I can't think of his name.
We'll see him come playoff time.
Didn't he show up for Joe Buck? I didn't see. I heard that, but I didn't see
it. Yeah, I didn't see it either. Video. I saw it on Twitter. I didn't see it.
Oh, I like Joe Buck too. He's got a good big game voice. Just like like Jim Nance doesn't have a big game voice, but he's got the nice soothing sounds. Oh, you know what we get this weekend too that I forgot? We get Vern.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Uncle Vern, it's his one time a year we bust out the old CBS blazer.
On the 16th, he'll be. I think that's where they always put him on the 16th hole.
Yeah, should be great television viewing now that we won't have. We're down three SEC games. I should mention too that Missouri that's also kind of on shaky grounds where they only have one positive test, but there's a bunch of contact tracing that couldn't.
Yeah, I don't think they had some issues most of the year. I haven't heard this week what they have, but yeah, I mean, it's very walking on eggshells at this point in the week for everybody, it seems like.
Speaking of walking on eggshells, Adam Luckett, Will Muschamp and Jeremy Pruitt.
I tweeted out Saturday. I was like, this feels like a pretty big game for Pruitt and Muschamp because if you win it, You've got a chance to get to 5-5, a pretty good chance. And then you could sell a season, hey, we went 5-5. You know, some things didn't break our way, but we found a way, and you can sell it. But now you look at both of them. I mean, 3-7 is probably the most likely record to finish up with. And both of them, Tennessee kind of took care of their business in the first half, but then just had a listless third quarter. And then South Carolina just got co-cocked at home.
I mean, the fact that Muschamp's a defensive guy and he gave up 50 to LSU with their backup quarterback and then 48 the following week.
Yeah.
And not to like a good offense.
Right. I didn't see that LSU game or the LSU game, so I can't really comment on that. But watching A&M, it was more of just an offense's ineptness that kind of blew the game open. Like, it should have been 14-0 at half. They just could not do anything on offense. Like, they had a Kentucky versus Mississippi State or slash Kentucky versus Missouri performance. I think they only ran like 40 something plays. It was just god awful. God awful. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, Muschamp, again, back to recruiting, the quickest way to find out if something's going to change, like, his recruiting has really taken a nosedive in this 2021 class compared to his other classes. They're going to be down there near Missouri, or not Missouri. They might finish 13th in the SEC. They got a chance near Vanderbilt. They're kind of in that area where they've been kind of middle of the pack, around 8-9. So that tells me, like, a change is on the way. It's just they owe him a lot of money. And then you got Hugh Freeze winning games against Virginia Tech. He might run the table. And there's just there's an impending bidding war going on for him. Like, I could see, you know, like, obviously Virginia Tech, Justin Fuente, that's kind of a strained relationship. If things went south for Doran, I think NC State would be in a shape to move. Like, if it comes, like, I could just see, like, one of those schools firing their coach and then going after Freeze, and then South Carolina been saying, all right, wait a minute now. Like, let's throw our hat in this ring. So I think that bidding war is coming. And then I don't know. And then on the Pruitt thing, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, Nick, but it's been awful quiet from Phil Fulmer. Like, usually he's got something to say, something about this or that.
He's we haven't take a bite heard out of somebody's out of ass. Yeah, really.
We haven't heard a peep out of that guy in quite a while. He said, what was that he said about the practice? He got all, you know, he said he was the only no vote for, like, practice start time or whatnot.
Oh, yeah. Whenever that was, like, back in June, whenever they could start working out.
We haven't heard a peep from him. Now, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying he's going to go out and do anything, but, you know, he's been known to work a few back channels. Now, it was his guy he hired, so it's going to be interesting to see how he deals with this. But you're seeing some signs with Pruitt, though, where how they've lost some games, some of these blowout victories, the quarterback, how he's handled the whole quarterback situation there, from grabbing Gary Tonnell's face mask to a revolving door to keep going to Gary Tonnell, to not, you know. Earlier this year, he came out and said, like, Harrison Bailey wasn't even practicing with the team. Like, it was just like, you know, he was just there at practice. He's like, we can only do it with two guys. So I need two or three guys. And so then it kind of, he doesn't play well at Georgia, and Tennessee comes back that Sunday and they have like a JV scrimmage. And he said, oh yeah, Harrison took 93 of the snaps. And then we saw him against Tennessee or against Kentucky. We haven't seen him since then. And there, it just, there's obviously, they've already overturned his staff once when Fulmer got in there, which seemed like me saying Fulmer said you need to hire these guys. I mean, that's currently not working. So if I could get odds on Fulmer being an interim head coach at some point in the next, I don't know, 2 years,
pulling a Barry Alvarez.
Yeah. I'm not saying to, like, permanently take over, but to take over during the season, which, God, you want to see a pumped up Adam Luckett before a game. If Fulmer took over 2022 and Kentucky's playing Tennessee, I would want that game probably more than any in of recent memory. But I don't know. We'll see. It's interesting times there on Rocky Top, and their fan base. No one surprised us losing their mind.
Oh, who's losing their mind more right now, Tennessee fans or Penn State fans?
I'm not. I don't know. I'm not that plugged into Penn State, but are they like super upset right now?
Well, they're holier than thou, so they can't. They don't understand. They can't grasp reality that they're 0-3.
You've got more of that Big Ten pulse than I do, but yeah, I get. I mean, I could see that for sure.
And the thing is, too, is James Franklin is such a hated. I can't even remember a time when, like,
I love the tweet he does where he tweets his opponent's name out, you know, for the whole characters, and then it does we're on to Maryland or on to whoever at the end.
And losing to Maryland's huge for recruiting up there. Like they do. They
yeah, they don't. A lot. Like they don't. They don't like each other. Those two.
He runs up
fan
the
bases.
Score on them.
Yes,
all the time.
Yeah, and they don't like each other at all.
Them, man, that was. Man, that's brutal. The Michigan Harbaugh thing is going to be just – that's going to come to just a messy end. Like, there's no way around that.
They can't fire him, though. Like, they have to – it has to be a mutual ending. But if he don't have a landing spot, he's probably not going to go anywhere. I think that's a situation where you could see them kind of restructure the contract.
Or he tries to go back to the NFL.
Well, that's what I think would be the move, but NFL's kind of gone – Well, NFL's gone a different way now with all of the, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, Sean McVay, offensive-centric type hires where Harbaugh's
he's
had
the
that man ball. Yeah, that man ball situation.
The fact that he had Andrew Luck, too, that was the guy that really took him to the promised land. I mean, hell, he ends up coaching in a Super Bowl because of it. Like, that's wild. That Andrew Luck was in that offense.
It's crazy. That he was the guy in the NFL that was kind of ahead of the curve with Colin Kaepernick and the you know the zone reads type stuff they did, and now it's you know he's way behind it looks like, and now they just can't get it figured out. That you know Ohio State broke him. I think that's pretty obvious. He just he's very confused about what to do. He's made some hires and he. Like the defensive coordinator who was awesome there for 3 years. Now they can't. Now they just look lost. I mean, it's a mess.
Oh, and yeah, you don't hate to see it. You don't hate to see it. And if you look at it now, I believe Northwestern they won again. So the Big Ten West is going to be a Northwestern or Purdue. We'll be playing like Ohio State in Indianapolis.
Yeah,
December the 17th or whatever it may be.
We'll see what happens with Wisconsin, how they because I don't think they've made a rule. Yeah, I don't think they've made a ruling on that. What the rules going and they're supposed to play. Like apparently Wisconsin is on schedule, and that's the ABC primetime game, Wisconsin Michigan.
Oh God, what a primetime game that is. Hey, but Indiana, you don't need name brands when you got 9 Indiana ready to roll and be your bell cow for the conference.
Yeah, one of those years.
Which, by the way, did you – I would like to thank you, Luckett, because you helped save my horse racing day. It wasn't a complete wash, but, like, I missed out on a big winner because I was too slow. The delay on my TV was too much, and I didn't get my bet in on time for Whitmore. But you told me that you got some good Luck of the Irish vibes kicking in, and that helped me. Like I said, we had some chasing opportunities. I chased that dragon. And I made up for at least one of those impulsive deposits to my TVG account.
Good thing you didn't ask me on Sunday because I was feeling very good about the Bucks on Sunday night. So good thing you asked me on Saturday and not Sunday.
And then Florida, they absolutely curb stomped Georgia, which I was a little worried about that bet at first because the first play they went, 75 yards to the house? But, man, Stetson
it was 14-0 like that.
What's is JT Daniels not good? Is he not healthy? Like, what's the holdup?
Seth Emerson, who writes for the Athletics, their Georgia beat writer, he tweeted out today, like, the Athletics doing something where it's like instant news, like it's like our own Twitter feed or something.
Yeah. It's really like, really. So you're trying to get, I've seen it because ESPN tried to do it.
You know what I'm talking about?
It's like Fetch. It's not catching on, but it's the thing where they basically write just longer tweets inside their own. Little
right. Platform. Well, they're pushing that hard, and he screenshotted his today, which was that JT Daniels took most of the first team reps at practice for a source.
Okay, that
I think
they're due.
I wonder if there was a little gentleman's agreement between Daniels and Kirby that he wouldn't play this year, just because he didn't want to force a hurried up comeback on a bum knee. They had Jamie Newman already in the fold, so they didn't think they need him. I wonder if that was if there was maybe a little agreement there, and then they said just apply for the waiver. Why not apply for it? And then I just wonder if that was, because that's really, it doesn't make sense why he's not playing if he's fully healthy.
Gentleman's agreement, though. That's
right.
Interesting.
just a thought.
It also could be another, like Kirby, you know, he loves to sit on a lead, and Stetson Bennett's the perfect guy to do it. So yeah. Maybe Kirby was willing to do that for another year.
Stetson's not great. He is what he is, but like Georgia's receiver injuries have killed them. The Blaylock kid is out, been out all year. Pickens hadn't played in a few weeks. They had that two true freshman that got hurt second series of the game, who's like a top 50 recruit, went out. So they just don't have the receivers. And then the guys they were throwing to, you had there was like three or four drops or two or three deep catches that probably, you know, you got to help out your quarterback at some point. So they didn't give him a lot of help. And Florida just, they got caught up in a buzzsaw there in the second quarter. Like they just needed to get to halftime. And I think some of those injuries showed up. Like not having LeCount there back there for Georgia was a big damn deal. And then they lose like Lewisine on that. Now that would, you want to talk about a nasty hit with him and Kyle Pitts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a car crash.
Oh man. It really was. I'm curious, Luckett. Do you see a world where Florida can beat Bama? Do they have enough guns? Because I feel like the reason why the
defense, their defense isn't good enough. Their defense will get exposed against Bama. I just don't think they have.
Which is true. Their defense does stink. They're not good at tackling, especially in the run game. But I feel like you could still expect to see like 100-point scored in an SEC championship game between the two.
Yeah. I mean, if Pitts is out there, he's a walking mismatch. He's the biggest mismatch in college football. Dealing with him is a bear. Yeah, he's going to be gone. He'll be a top
10
20 pick or whatnot.
Yeah,
he's a true junior. He's just a walking mismatch. Yeah, they'll be able to keep up. I just think Bama's got a little bit more ammo, but it's different with Waddle not being there either. Like, we need to see Bama more without Waddle, though, too. It could be. If Waddle's like this big miss, it could be. But Alabama's got the better. The biggest thing in that game, I think, is Najee Harris.
I was about to say, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's the biggest difference in that game.
The clock a little, get aggravating yards, extend some possessions, and keep the ball out of Florida.
What they I worry about for Bama is they're last in the SEC in sack rate. Like, they're not really rushing the passer this year, which is a concern. If Trask is able to just, you know, sit back there in halftime and pick you apart.
My other, I brought up the draft because you got a little Dane Brugler bump today. Did I see that?
I did.
So if y'all don't know Dane Brugler, he is, I know Mel Kiper gets all the like ESPN hype, but Dane Brugler is like the workingest workhorse of all the NFL draft folks. He works for The Athletic, and he'll put out this draft guide.
His draft guide's awesome, but it's a mammoth of a thing.
It really is like an encyclopedia of every potential prospect in the draft. And why don't you just tell us what would happen with you and Mr. Brugler lately?
Basically, I said he released his top 50 as of right now, and Darren Kennard wasn't on the list. So I pretty much said this is something we need to monitor moving forward, because it's pretty obvious at this point Kennard is looked at as a guard, not a tackle, and guards really don't go in the draft early unless they're a freak. And Dane just said, I have him as a guard, but he's really good, and he's definitely a day two pick if he comes out. Day two is, round two or round three. And round two is mostly top 50 picks. You get towards the bottom, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really going to be like what Kennard wants. I think we've seen in the past Kentucky has pushed some of these guys, Mike Edwards, Josh Allen, to come back if they got a chance to really – up their draft stock.
It would really help Kentucky's offense next year to have him back too.
But at the same time, like, if he's cool with being a guard, like, this is about, if he is, like Dane says, around the second or third round pick, that's about as good as you can get.
How much are you going to max out anyway?
Yeah.
Now, and I can't think of his name now. The dude for the Colts, they got drafted like top 10. Yeah. What's his name?
Quentin Nelson. That's why I said it. Unless you're just a freak. Right. Quentin Nelson, the Zach Martin for the Cowboys.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're a freak, that you can get up there, but mostly, you know, guards stay for, or interior linemen stay. Like, you don't see any centers leaving early for the most part. For the most part, that's the position that kind of stays and maxes out their eligibility. But we'll see what Kennard. Now, the thing with Kennard is, if enough teams think he's a tackle, then you can talk yourself into it.
Right.
So, yeah, enough teams think I'm a tackle, I can really, like, really work on my pass sets this offseason. Then he could get into the front. It's just what, you know, if he's cool with just being a guard, you know, we'll see. Because he's definitely going to have that flexibility regardless, which is big in the NFL, because of the 53-man roster, where he could swing out and play some tackle for you if need be.
Especially but, now.
Right. But so, he'll definitely be a, you know, he'll come off the board pretty early, but it'll just depend on, you know, it's going to be his decision what he wants. But I, obviously for Kentucky, it'd be very, very nice to have him back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's going to be play a significant role in next year's offensive line, because you are going to lose a ton. And at least at the guard position where Dotson and Horsey are coming back, if you have Kennard at one tackle, between Nasir Watkins, maybe working in
Jeremy Flax,
John Young, Jeremy Flax, you have some bodies there.
Yeah.
So
long term, I think the offensive line is in really good shape. They're recruiting the position well. Like, I'm big on David Wollaball in this class, and obviously Jagger Burton's pretty damn good. You look at some of the bodies they have there, like Jeremy Flax, you should be able to kind of plug him in next year. Quentin Wilson is a guy they've spoke really high of to step in at center.
Like, he just doesn't have the reps.
Right. Well, he's got the best, you know, maybe the best center in program history. He's just playing
right, behind. Right, right.
And that's the position that you can't really rotate center. But long term, I think the offensive line in really good shape. Of all the positions on offense, they're in really good shape. It's the other positions. Running back too. I think running back's in good shape. It's figuring out these other spots. Which gives me a question I want to ask Nick. What's like, all right, like these last four games plus hopefully a bowl game. Like, what do you want to see from the team moving forward? Like when we have this, when we record this podcast, I don't know, around Christmas time or whatnot, like maybe it's time to pump up for the offseason and get optimistic about 2021. And what do you need to build? What do you need to add to your ammo or your tank? To get you there.
I need three big plays from Michael Drennan. Three.
Right.
Not just one. I'll sell myself on just one in like June of next year, because that's the kind of person I am. I'm optimistic to a fault. I really want to see Bo Allen play on Saturday. I want them to run the ball effectively enough to get Bo on the field, because as much as they may be hesitant with Gatewood, I don't think that's the case with Bo, from at least the way they talked about
well,
it. So
again, tea leaves, I think he's a quarterback next year. Like, I don't think it takes a lot to come to that conclusion.
So I want to sell myself on the future between Bo Allen having a little bit of success with Mike Drennan. And then one of those big guys, like Cummings or Upshaw, because I feel like Upshaw, even though he has that he had like a bad drop in the end zone, was it against Auburn, I believe, or what's his game? No, it's Tennessee. It was at Tennessee. Even though he had that, he hasn't really been put in the situations where it's an easy kind of catch, or hey, we're running a fade, let me go run underneath the ball when we're taking a shot. There's been a lot of underthrows that have made his life difficult. So I want to be able to sell myself on Keaton Upshaw, Mike Drennan, and Bo Allen. That's what I really want, and I just want to see them put up some points. Like, and I don't know what that number is. I wish I did. But, I mean, people are running up the score on South Carolina and Vandy.
Well, it's weird because – the two games they've won this year, they've housed.
Yeah.
And they never house anybody.
Never. They don't blow it. They blow out zero people. They can't even blow out MACtion teams. And they blow out Mississippi State and Tennessee, typically two of their tougher games of the year. So yeah. I want to see them put up some points. And even in Florida, against Florida, like,
yeah, I think Bama, you have to throw away a little bit.
Yeah.
But Florida, I think they match up well in certain spots. I think that's the measuring stick game. Like, I think they really need to go down there and put together.
Well, because
game.
In even though I made those very particular what I want to see, those could probably be somewhat unrealistic as long as they show some fight. Because
yeah,
like,
well, I think it's more than that in Florida because you've coming up so far as a program, like you can't be going down there and losing 41-13.
Right,
like,
right.
You got to go, like, at this point, you got to go down there and really, you know, swing with them.
That blowout to them. I mean, that was the turning point back in 2016 when Jordan Jones, like, called out all of his teammates for not tackling and all that. Like,
yeah,
that was a turning point. And has there been another blowout loss since then? Was the Tennessee game last
year? Yeah, I mean, 2017, Kentucky, Georgia. 2017, they got housed twice. Dan Mullen, Mississippi State. And
The game's at Mississippi State. You're right. Those always end poorly. But – in Florida, they've played close. They've played well. So just put up some fight. Because here's the thing, like it that we remember November, as you said. And for me, in these games, you're turning around and having a signing day, a pretty important one at that.
Yeah.
4 days after your scheduled final regular season game. So you need to at least have some positive vibes going in there. Because here's the thing, like it. If you just beat Vandy, you're going to go to a bowl game at 3-7. There's enough SEC bowl games that they're going to have to invite people. So, like, I would much – if you see a little bit of fight, I would be happy knowing that going into that bowl game, you can almost use it as a swan song and then a springboard for those young guys where we can see Bo Allen go out there and sling it and Mike Drennan catching big passes and Upshaw or Isaiah Cummins making big plays. So that's a lot of it is just show us some fight so that this November doesn't leave us with bad memories.
For me, obviously, I want to start off. You didn't mention defense, but I still want to see this defense. They got better each week. Like, yeah, I don't want to really see them regress because if they can keep rolling, they've got a chance to go into next year being like a Mac Daddy kind of unit to really be like that. Like we could have the conversation like Kentucky might have the best defense of the SEC in the offseason. I think the pieces are there where you could talk yourself into that. And they're going to return pretty much everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much except for Bohanna.
Yeah.
And Hoskins.
And then and Hoskins, how funny would it be? I've thought about this. Just do the seventh year. Like you've done six. Just run it back for seven. We can,
great.
We call him Van Wilder. It would just be awesome. And then offensively, I want to see Rodriguez. Like we've seen him kind of, you know, he was a workhorse against Georgia and we've seen him put up big numbers, but I want to see him. Can he do it every game?
Consistently.
Weekly.
Yeah.
And then offensively, I don't think they've hit a deep post since Florida, the win at Florida in 2018. Think about that.
No. The Josh Ali touchdown, the Belk Bowl was a deep post.
Well,
technically. Yeah. It was like 20 yards, but yeah.
Outside the red zone, okay. But yeah, that's what I want to see them hit on one of those. Just can we have something? Can we get some pop in the pass? I don't really care about the pass game so much. Just can they find some big plays? Because I think in the year, you just got to do what you do. You run block. You got to run block in OL. You got a, you know, pretty good rushing attack. And that's really what I want to see. And then after that, like I've said, I think a lot of the offseason, like they're just going to get – they need some fresh blood, I think, on the offensive side of the ball. And then I think that whatever it is, one, two, three hires, I think they're going to be very important hires for Mark Stoops to make.
Man, I just watched an Ohio kicker miss a 28-yard field goal.
Yeah, I just saw that. He just got consoled on the sideline.
He's missed two field goals under 30 yards.
Did you see – Stanford's kicker, who is like legit good, was 0-for-4 in their game on Saturday.
It's college kickers, man. It's brutal.
By the way, Vanderbilt's got a god-awful kicking situation, kicking and punting. They're last in the SEC in net punting. They've used two kickers. They missed one of three from under. They're 1 of 3 from under 30 yards. So essentially an extra point. They're 1 of 3. They've got a god awful kicking situation.
Can I also add that this is random, but I got to looking up, like, where was Frank Solich before he was at Ohio? Because he's been coaching there for as long as I can remember. He was the Nebraska coach that replaced Osborne. He is the total replacing a legend and firing him because you don't know what you are kind of deal. He had three top ten finishes with him.
Well, they were pissed when he went like 10-2.
And he was second in eight people. It's crazy.
Yeah, think about that, man. They've gone.
That's the steady hand that they turned down to go get Bo Pelini. Was Pelini his replacement?
No, he was. They hired Bill Callahan.
Oh God!
And that it was awful.
Did they do that twice? Am I just dreaming that?
What?
Bill Callahan.
Not just once. He was only there for like a year, maybe 2 years, and then they brought in Pelini. And even Pelini, like he would have eventually got fired, but they probably rushed him out a little too soon. But that just shows you, like, entering these coaching searches, man, they're dumb luck. Because
I mean, Florida, look what Ohio's gotten out of that. Jesus. Right.
Yeah. Florida. Yeah, exactly. Florida wanted Scott Frost and Chip Kelly. Both of those guys at their jobs are stinking it up, and Mullen's got them, you know, in a position to get a playoff spot in year three. And he's doing it with a guy like a quarterback that no one wanted. So these coaching searches, you know,
it's a crapshoot.
Like, I need to start a firm. Like, cause these firms don't do anything. Like, a lot of this is just, you know, at the end of the day, you really don't know like how he's going to fit here, what he's going to do. It's just, you know, it's taking a shot in the dark more times than not.
Well, and you also have a great name for it too. It takes a little luck to land the right coach. And I've got just the thing for you. That's what it is. You've got the slogan right there.
There you go.
Lucky search with Adam Luckett.
There you go.
Bada boom, bada bam. Well, we need to get out of here. I'm sweating just profusely because the weather can't make up its mind this year. It doesn't want football weather yet. Where the hell is that football weather?
All right. Like, it was, what was it, 71 degrees this past weekend? I went out on Sunday. I put on a fleece, jeans. I walked outside, and I'm like, this is bullshit. And stomped back inside. Put on shorts and a t-shirt. Like, my biological clock is not, like, it's like, what is going on right now?
Leaves are falling. I need sweatshirts.
Yeah, right. I am not cutting the grass, Mother Nature. You better pick it up. I'm not doing it.
Oh, well, Kentucky better pick it up too. This Saturday against Vanderbilt. The show is going on as of now. And we appreciate you all listening to this show. For Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Rash. This is 11 Personnel. We'll talk to you next week. Go Cats, go Kroger.